Our series, America Since the Bomb, we're now broadcasting Sick Humor and Satire, a selection from the 50s introduced by D.G. Brightson.
Some 250 years ago, Dean Swift considered the problem of what to do about the growing number of orphans and underprivileged children. His modest proposal for solving the problem was to eat them. Properly cooked, he explained, children can be downright appetizing. I merely mention this to remind you that sick or black or gallows humor is no new thing. It has long fulfilled a useful function in society as a safety valve for anger and disgust. Let me give you a modern example. While I was over in America this summer, James Meredith was shot, and at first reported killed, on a freedom march through Mississippi. The same evening, a friend of mine commented on the fact.
Thank goodness it wasn't no Mississippian that shot him. I thought that was the most outrageous and hideous crime I ever heard of, shooting that man in the back that way. Us Mississippi folks wouldn't do a thing like that. The man that perpetrated that dastardly deed was from Tennessee. Us Mississippi folks never shoot no nigger with number 6 birdshot. You can't kill your nigger with number 6 birdshot. You can make him jump and run and mad as hell at you, but you cannot get a nigger with number 6 birdshot. Anybody in Mississippi knows that. You don't see us going around and shooting them with number 6 birdshot. We use buckshot. You don't see us dynamiting churches with Baby John firecrackers. We use real dynamite, and I'm glad to say when we dynamite a church, it stays dynamited.
Now, before you ring up Broadcasting House or write to the Times in protest, let me explain three things. Firstly, the speaker, John Henry Fork, was heart and soul on the side of the Negro in the integration struggle. Secondly, his parody of a semi-literate segregationist expressed the disgust and contempt he felt for all such people. Thirdly, by raising a laugh out of a painful subject, he was forcing us to face up to it. Whether we chose to do anything about it was up to us. At least, we had been rather savagely reminded. Dean Swift had been doing as much for his own times with his modest proposal, and so had Defoe in his shortest way with the dissenters. Tom Lehrer has done as much for us in many of his songs.
1 week of every year is designated National Brotherhood Week. This is just one of many such weeks honoring various worthy causes. One of my favorites is National Make Fun of the Handicapped Week, which Frank Fontaine and Jerry Lewis are in charge of, as you know. During National Brotherhood Week, various special events are arranged to drive home the message of brotherhood. This year, for example, on the first day of the week, Malcolm X was killed, which gives you an idea of how effective the whole thing is. I'm sure we all agree that we ought to love one another, and I know there are people in the world who do not love their fellow human beings, and I hate people like that. Here's a song about National Brotherhood Week. Oh, the white folks hate the black folks, and the black folks hate the white folks. To hate all but the right folks is an old established rule. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, Lena Horne and Sheriff Clark are dancing cheek to cheek. It's fun to eulogize the people you despise, as long as you don't let them in your school. Oh, the poor folks hate the rich folks, and the rich folks hate the poor folks. All of my folks hate all of your folks. It's American as apple pie. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, New Yorkers love the Puerto Ricans, cause it's very chic. Step up and shake the hand of someone you can't stand. You can tolerate him if you try. The Protestants hate the Catholics, and the Catholics hate the Protestants, and the Hindus hate the Muslims, and everybody hates the Jews. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, it's National Everyone Smile at One Anotherhood Week. Be nice to people who are inferior to you. It's only for a week, so have no fear. be grateful that it doesn't last all year.
Tom Lehrer certainly didn't invent sick humour. He merely gave it a new vogue. Starting from the purely Charles Adams, I Hold Your Hand in Mine, or My Hometown, or The Old Dope Peddler, Lehrer has moved steadily into the field of social comment. And that the vogue for sick humour should date from the middle 50s is itself significant. The Beat Generation had only recently called attention to itself in America by an expression of disgust for the nuclear age and a rejection of its values. Not, of course, by any form of protest. The Beats merely made a virtue out of withdrawal. Active protest was to come later, in the 60s. Not that all sick humour deals with social or political themes. A lot is merely sick.
Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Gauze.
Gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
A little more gauze.
We don't have any more gauze.
That's all the gauze?
Yeah. I don't know what happened. We had a small roll of gauze.
Give me a sponge.
Sponge.
Clamp.
You have the clamp.
Suture.
We have a suture.
Edith.
Yes?
I love you.
Please, please.
Sponge.
You have the sponge.
Give me another sponge. I want
you
two sponges.
You have all the sponges.
I have two sponges.
We don't. We only had two sponges.
This is terrible when we wrangle this way.
But
why do you avoid me?
We have two sponges.
Why do you avoid me in the hall?
I don't avoid you in the hall.
You turned your back at the coffee machine.
I didn't turn my back.
You deliberately turned your back.
Excuse me, the oxygen is failing.
Edith, don't change the subject.
But it's failing.
Well, turn it up.
Well, I'm trying to.
Is there somebody else?
Is there something you'd like? A suture? Sponge? Something?
Is there somebody else?
I don't care to discuss it now,
thank you. It's Pinsky, isn't it?
I don't care to talk about it.
I saw you in the cafeteria.
I just don't care to talk about it, Dr. Harris. Now, would you like anything else? Otherwise, I'd like to go.
Go in the middle of an operation?
Well, I have nothing else to hand you. You've got it all in the patient.
Edith, what have I done to hurt you this way?
You haven't done anything to hurt me. I just wish you wouldn't badger me.
Badger you?
I need time to think. I told you that before.
I don't know you like this. You're cold. You're diffident.
Because you badger me.
I haven't badgered you.
You're only making me run away.
Is it badgering you to tell you I love you? Is that badgering you?
Please do not tell me over and over in the cafeteria and operations.
All right, I'm sorry. Give me a needle.
Needle.
Thread.
Would you like me to thread the needle?
I don't even know what I'm doing. Yes, thread it, please.
All right. Catgut?
Yes.
Cheer up. Come on, I have a little joke for you. Knock, knock.
Oh.
Come on. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Catgut.
Catgut who?
Catgut your tongue? Oh, come on.
Edith, why are you torturing me?
I'm not. I was trying to cheer you up.
Well, there's only one way you can cheer me up, and that's to say yes.
Please, please, Dr. Harris, not now. This is how you drive me away every time.
Put your finger on this knot, please.
All right, but don't do anything funny.
I'm not doing anything funny. I'm sewing up the patient. All now right. It's you who starts these things.
All right, all right.
Oh, I do love you so.
Oh, please, please, let go of my finger. I knew you were going to do this.
Please, no, don't pull back. I do. I love you. I love you.
Let go of my finger.
Don't pull back. You're pulling the stick.
Please, Dr. Harris, stop.
Edith, it is Pinsky, isn't it?
I don't want to talk about it now.
It's very important to me to know whether it's Pinsky or not.
Give me time to check. Now the oxygen is failing again.
Let it fail. I'm sick of this torture.
Please, so, Dr. Harris, everyone is looking at you.
I'm not going to finish this operation unless you say yes.
Dr. Harris, you're being impossible.
I'm not going to finish this operation unless you say yes, Edith.
Dr. Harris, this patient will die.
I've been tortured long enough. Yes or no, which is it going to be?
This is absolute blackmail.
I don't care. I don't care what lengths I go to anymore. All is fair and all that.
Dr. Harris, you're a doctor. A doctor. Doesn't that mean anything to you,
yes,
a surgeon?
I'm a doctor, Edith, but I'm a man also, and I will not go on with this operation until you give me your answer, and it better be yes.
I have no choice. Yes.
All right, then. Clamp, darling.
Nichols and May on what one might call a combined operation. Sick humour, after all, is what you might expect in an age of fallout, strontium 90, mutating genes, and lesser problems.
The reason I drink on the stage is that I always tell you when I drink, I've got bronchitis. And it's the truth. And the thing I don't think about, it's a very unhip disease. At least tuberculosis has some literate and sexual connotation to it. From Camille, maybe. And it's a good disease, TB, because, like, chicks feel sorry for you. Yeah, yeah. They say, what's the matter with you? I've got TB, baby. That's cool. Go out with him. I'll sit by the radiator here. bronchitis is just sort of poor and Jewish. That's all right. What's the matter with you? I've got bronchitis. It's not euphonious. Cholera. That's sort of a Midwest kind of Nelson Algren disease. No, Nelson Algren is sort of a measles freak, if you notice. Everybody's got twisted legs from measles. No, that's sort of a
Protestant disease. It's plain, nice, austere.
About the hippest disease to have is pellagra. If you had to have anything, they'd say, what's the matter with you?
I've got pellagra.
Just bringing up the conversation. What time is it? Yeah, I got pellagra.
Oh, yeah. Of course, it's a fortune. We brought it from Newport.
Lenny Bruce, one of the zaniest of the sick humorists, who, incidentally, underlines the racial aspect of the art. For the last 2,000 years, sick humor has been almost a prerogative of the Jews. And these last 10 years, it's also been exploited by the Negroes, to whom it comes no less naturally.
Well, we just have to quit worrying so much. We worry. We have people right now worrying about the Jews and Arabs in the old country. Worrying if they start fighting tonight, who would win? You know damn well who would win. Be honest, you know Camel ain't gonna outrun no Cadillac, don't you? I was reading a paper a couple of months ago where they're working on the world's first kosher atomic bomb. They said it's gonna be for peaceful purposes. That's right. Trying to find a way to crack open a stale bagel. And like all the governments all over the world is like real shook up because they don't know if it's gonna be wholesale or retail. I worked with Sammy Davis a couple of years ago on Southside. We became very good friends. And Sammy called me one day long distance and said, Greg, I need some advice. I need some help. I said, what is it, Sammy? He said, well, I'm thinking about becoming a Jew. What do you think? And I told him, don't go. What you want to be segregated twice for? And can you imagine if Sammy ever walk out and start singing, Let My People Go, won't it be a hell of a crowd?
Dick Gregory, one of the more politically minded of the Negro humorists. And by way of contrast, Godfrey Cambridge. Less political, perhaps, but able, nevertheless, to get his message over to his white audiences.
Well, I'm delighted these days when I look down at my audiences and I always see that they're integrated. And it's marvelous, because I remember years ago, yeah, we got them here. I remember exchange students. I can remember years ago when I would go to a party and I'd be the only colored brother there. And they'd all want to talk about the race problem and I'd want to talk about my golf score. And I'd go to another party and I'd be the only colored brother there. And they'd all want to talk about the race problem and I'd want to talk about my Miles Davis records. Till finally they got so bugged they started inviting two Negroes to the party in case one didn't work out. So now I recognize that there was a crying need to be fulfilled here. So I started my famous Cambridge Rent a Negro plan. But I found out that you can't rent them too light. See, because I had one fella call me up and he said, man, you done ruined my party. That cat don't even look colored. I said, of course he's colored. Ask him. He said, he tell me he's not colored. I said, put that fool on the phone. I said, baby, will you tell that man that you colored? You costing me money. He said, I'm not colored. I just have more fun this way. So I had to go over and fill in for him to protect my money. And I had to go there and answer all those very hip questions. Yes, I like watermelon. We have watermelon soup, watermelon pie, fried watermelon. Joe Louis is a heck of a fighter. Mm. Death, yeah. The cat said, well, that wasn't very good. And I said, well, I'm only part colored. And if they really got on my nerves, I had a cute way of getting back at them. Because what I'd do is we'd sit there at the table eating. And see, I'd start eating my mashed potatoes with my bare hands. And I'd hear the mother say, shh, don't say nothing. He don't know no better, and if they get mad, he may pick up the house. Do you know that I sat there at that table with them six people, with all of us running our hands through that mashed potato? I got so disgusted, I got up and left the table.
Sick humor was not the only reaction of the late 50s to life in an age of anxiety. There was also the cruelly. Yes, Mrs. Lincoln, but what did you think of the play? I can't eat cake. There's a gap in my neck. And all the others, most of them sacrilegious. Up a one-way street. I love a parade. Only one nail left, and so on. We don't need to go into details. Irreverence, of course, is an American obsession. Stan Freberg and his radio shows took the mickey out of every American institution from Dragnet to the Declaration of Independence. Here he is on the subject of the Boston Tea Party.
Whoops.
Jeez, Charlie, you knocked that whole load of tea in the water there.
Well, I miscalculated with the block and tackle, that's
all. Yeah, well, I mean, you blew it. You missed the whole deck there.
Yeah, well, maybe nobody will notice.
Well, what do you mean? There's tea floating all over the place. I mean, how can I go and demand an hourly increase for you guys?
With fringe benefits
and all that. My men keep knocking stuff overboard.
Well, I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't do any good, Charlie. Now, I'll cover for you this time, but let's get our story straight.
Good.
Now, a bunch of those Patriot guys came sneaking around dressed up in...
How about in Indian suits?
That's good, in Indian suits.
Good.
They were a little loaded, and they shoved the tea over because they were sore about the tea tax, okay?
Okay. You think anybody will swallow that?
Well, it's just wild enough, Charlie.
Gee, look at it swirling around down there. I wonder where we could find a fortune teller that reads harbors.
Traditions and institutions and sacred cows are not the only targets for American satire. There are also the politicians. In 1959, Mr. Khrushchev paid a visit to the United States as the guest of President Eisenhower. Bob Newhart imagined a TV rehearsal of his arrival.
All right, Jerry, cue the plane. All right, have the plane come down. That's the way. All right, have the plane land. All right, taxi. All right, Jerry, have him stop on the chalk marks if you can. All right, he's going past it. It's all right. All right, camera one, get in tight on the door. Get in tight on Khrushchev. What? A mustache? I don't think so, Jer. Jerry, you're on the wrong guy. You're on the wrong... Pan around. Fact sheet I got says he should be a short, stocky guy in a gray suit. Keep... Looks like he slept in it. That's him. All right. Have him wave to the crowd. Tell him there'll be a crowd. All right, Jerry, make a note. We're going to have to spray the plane. I'm getting too much glare off it. All right, have him walk down the ramp. All right, cue the flower girl. What? Where's the little creep with the flowers, huh? All right, hold it. Cut. Somebody find the little monster with the flowers, huh? Why has it always got to be somebody's little kid? Why can't we use midgets, huh? All right, have him get back in the plane. All right, you got the flower kid? All right, hang on to her, will you? All right, go in tight on... Jerry, hang on to the flower kid. She's running up the ramp. She's supposed to be at the foot of the ramp. All right, let her go. That's all right, let her go. All right, tell Khrushchev he's going to have to watch the door. He banged the kid with a door. come on. All right. Have him wave to the crowd. That's the way. Have him wave his hat. And make a note, Jerry. We're going to have to spray his head. All right. Have him take the flowers from the kid. All right. Tell him to kiss the kid. All right. Have him walk down the ramp. Don't have him skip like the kid, Jerry. It looks ridiculous. All right. Have him walk over towards Ike. All right, somebody cue Ike. Somebody take the putter from Ike, huh? All right, have him shake hands with Ike. All right, have him shake hands with Herder. Not Ike shake hands with Herder, have Khrushchev shake hands with Herder. All right, rest of the diplomatic corps. All right, walk back to the microphones. All right, have him start the speech. Blah, 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 blah. But Jerry, he's hopping up and down. I can't keep him in the picture, Jerry. He keeps hopping up and down. Find out he has to go where? Jerry had 19 hours to take care of that. I can't take the time, Jerry. I got guiding light right behind me. All right. He finishes the speech. All right, cue the official cars. All right, have them get in the cars. Not all of them in the same car, Jerry. They ought to know that. All right, have the cars pull out. Have them pulled by the camera platform. Jerry, that's Mrs. Khrushchev. Run alongside the car. Tell them they forgot Mrs. Khrushchev. Oh. All right, stop the car. Have her get in. That's the way. All right, I'll sit on Lodge's lap. It really doesn't matter. All right, Nixon's in. It does. All right, have them start up again. That's the way. Have them head toward the exit. That's Jerry, what are they stopping for now? He can't wait any longer. All right, we'll break it here. We'll break it. I think it's in the white hangar. Well, Jerry, I've never been there. I'm not sure. You know what I mean? Well, there's nobody around here. What, you know? All right, Jerry, when he gets back, we'll take it from the door. Right. All right, I'll be talking to you, Jerry. Right, bye.
Eisenhower, the father figure to the age of conformity, had become a butt for nearly every nightclub humorist by the time that conformity itself had begun to pall. So had Vice President Nixon, prospective candidate for the next presidential election. And so had Sherman Adams, after an unfortunate allegation of bribery and corruption.
Well, Sherm, you goofed, baby. Six iron. Let's see, I'll make that little putt there. And, Sherm, I don't want to fight you, baby, but, I really have got my hands tied. Now, maybe we can beat this if you tell me now. Now, let's see. Get straight. You got a coat, right? Yeah. And you got the rug. Yeah. And, Now, what did you do in the hotel for $2,000? Now, what I want to know is, did you get anything else? No, I didn't get anything else. Don't lie to me. Because, you know, I won't hit you if you tell me the truth. Tell me the truth and get it off your chest now. You know, don't, you know, I hate a liar. If I find out later, then I'll, you know, wrap you around a little. But... I got one more thing. What's that? Delaware. Oh, how could you take that? You can't do things like that. What's the matter with you? I don't know. Well, how are we going to get out of this? I said I got an idea. You're going to laugh at me for saying this. What? The newspapers are really bringing all the heat on us. So if we could think of a headline to sort of wipe it out just for 4 or 5 days, well, what can we do? How about getting one of the cabinet members assassinated? Well, I don't know. Some of those things backfire. Maybe if we could... You know, just get them, not in this country, somewhere else, maybe, you know. I got an idea. Switch on the intercom. Seal, send in Nixon. Hello, Nick, sweetie. Sit down, baby. Ah, oh, is he cute? Has a black curly head, devil. Get some of that 12-year-old scotch over here. Little Havana, huh, baby? Sweetie? What's going on? Here. Don't put me on, Ike. Nobody's putting you on, no? It's weird. You hang around the pad, and I got the greatest idea for you. How'd you like to go to Lebanon? Why don't you stop, Ike? Like, I don't want to go on any more trips. Why not? You're kidding. They'll love you over there. No, they won't love me over there, and I don't want to go. Let me stay for a few days, all right? Why don't you send Dulles? He's been home for 2 days. Oh, is that ridiculous, huh? Send my sweetie over there, huh? Come back with a Moroccan wallet, huh? Wouldn't you like that? And a secretary, huh? I don't want to go, that's all. Leave me alone. I don't want to go anywhere anymore. I just want to stay just to see the cherry blossoms come in. Oh, don't get maudlin now. I don't know why you don't want to go. It's you did great in Caracas. Are you kidding? They hated me there. They spit at me. Look at this suit. I never had it cleaned. Now, just to remind you, they spit at me. They hate me. They threw rocks at me. You got to go by a few people. A few squares who didn't dig your rabble rouses. I got letters from people who really liked you. I got a ton of mail on my desk now. I don't want to go anywhere. Is that a nice way to talk to me? Create a monster, is that what I did? The boy I helped capture teeth. I don't want to be ungrateful or anything like that. I know you've been nice to me, you know, but just I don't you know, if I did good in one place, you know. You did good in Biloxi. Oh, yeah, but I had a lot of people on my side, Father Coughlin. I think it's about time that I actually took a stand. I just don't want to go anywhere anymore. Why? I told you why. They just don't like me, that's all. I'm not going to fool myself. I just haven't got it, I guess. Something about my hair, I think. Want me to tell you the truth? What? They liked you at your old lady, Pat. That's it. Everybody dug you. It's her. She overdresses. Besides, who brings their wife on a trip? You'll go. You're not even going to fly tourists this time.
Perhaps the dean of political satirists of the late 50s was Mort Sahl, whose humor might be described as sick in a healthy way. Mort Sahl also throve upon Eisenhower, Nixon, and Khrushchev and the rest, but perhaps his most successful line of humor was the digressive soliloquy, which wandered around from local phenomena such as fallout warnings on to Disneyland.
The first time I saw Disney was on the Mickey Mouse Club, which is the weekday show. I haven't seen the evening show. I don't feel I'm ready yet to go somewhere. Because on the evening show, he has the history of the United States, which he got a franchise to from the congressional level. And he has people like Johnny Tremaine and Paul Revere and Tom Paine, which I felt was a mistake. But, see, Disney doesn't know anything about that because, you know, he's been with animals mainly and doesn't know anyway about politics and all, you know, the left and all. Anyway, so Walt Disney was on, the way I found the Mickey Mouse Club was I was at home, see? And I was watching Mayor Polson on television. He's our leader downtown. And he was talking about smog, and he was talking about fallout within the smog, you know? And we have a lot of smog, as you know, you can tell. And he said that there's fallout within it. coming from Nevada and that the government should do something about it because of strontium 90 and future generations and all that. And he said that the government should do something because the tests are in Nevada and it would be under interstate commerce, you know, or the Mann Act, someone suggested. So to make it more interesting to people. So Disney said, Disney doesn't come into this till later. Mayor Polson said that the government should do something about these tests, you know, so then, because it was double danger within the acid and the smog. So the government didn't do anything about it, but Polson said there's no telling what will happen if they keep testing these bombs every other day in Nevada, see? So he kept talking about mutations and all that jazz, so I figured, you know, it was kind of like left-wing propaganda. And, you know, and I have that attitude about the tests. I dig them because I think they're good for business, right? And I feel the United States is going to go ahead with bomb tests in synagogues and schools, right? Anyway, so... Anyway, I dig the tests, and I've always had that position that, you know, I'm not planning a large family anyway, right? So then, so while this is happening, you know, he keeps talking about mutations, and I said, well, you know, enough of this Buck Rogers jazz. So then Polson was on, I was on Channel 7, see, the American Broadcasting Company. Then a station break comes at 4:45 he was on, and at 5 o'clock, the Mickey Mouse Club comes on by this strange coincidence, and these kids come on who are in the Mickey Mouse Club with these paper mache hats, and have these ears made in the shape of their idol, their Mickey Mouse. They have this kind of ritual in which they pay this reverence to this rodent who is their leader. So they're all standing, well, you know, it's all right, as long as they believe in something. So they're all joining arms, and they're singing M-I-C-K-Y. The only thing is, there are like 500 kids, and if you've seen it before, you know, if you're like a mother and you have that every night, it doesn't bother you. But if you haven't seen these kids before, I ought to warn you that it might shake you up a little. With these ears, especially. You might not be aware that they're paper mache, and you might think maybe they ought to stop these tests after all. So, boy, eerie, huh? Very weird. So then Disney came on, and he told what they were trying to do at the park, and how he's tied up with the American Broadcasting Company, which owns 17% or something of Disneyland, the amusement park. And he told a lot of things down there about some of the things they have, and they have a safe driving course in which, you know, you can go out the Santa Ana Freeway there, which is part of Disneyland, the freeway itself. And when you go in there, I saw a great accident on the Santa Ana Freeway near there where a Volkswagen hit a dog, and it seems the dog walked away, you know, one of those. Anyway, the car was like ironed out. Anyway. So Disney came on, and he talked a lot about brotherhood and everything, and he talked about the citizenship program during the summer in which they have kids act as guides at Disneyland, you know, instead of delivering papers or something. So they have kids, you know, the mean age is about 8, and they act as guides because the other kids visiting the park have more faith in them, and then they can lead them to the park. And a lot of good kids, you know, who are learning citizenship, some of them, by working, whereas others have become involuted and bitter by working. And we're saying a lot of things that weren't planned for the air to Mr. Disney, like, you know, when are you going to let the union in? You know, and a lot of that. So, which I think is unfair because he doesn't know anything about that. You know, he's been with animals, mostly. So, you know, the only time he ever had any union troubles was in 1947 when they had a strike in the industry and people were striking at his studios in Burbank, and his artists didn't know how to strike because they're inanimate. So they went out, right? They went out and drew pickets on his wall, right? And then he went out and drew Burbank policemen beating them. So anyway, it was very, with tear gas, very interesting, labor relations. So anyway, he talked about brotherhood on the show, Disney, and then he had his good dramatic values, and he had these kids with these t-shirts on, which are sold in the park for $1.50, which is cost, I understand. And they have his characters on them, like Donald Duck and Goofy and Mickey Mouse for some of the retarded people. And if the others, he has, like, you know, Davy Crockett and all those people, and Br'er Rabbit, which is a corruption of brother. It's a regional dialect indulged in by groups, minority groups, that have been kept into a cultural lag in these ghettos through a lack of enlightenment. Anyway, so they have these t-shirts, and then one kid was way down at the water fountain with a plain t-shirt his mother bought at the Broadway, and Disney was saying that they should play with him anyway, which I thought was pretty wild. You know, because he said, at Disneyland, we don't penalize a kid, you know, if his mother is an agnostic, which is great.
It's interesting to contrast the rambling ad-libbed satire of Lenny Bruce or Mort Sahl with the later crisp, immaculate satire of someone like Woody Allen. In fact, it's rather like comparing a speech by Eisenhower with a speech by Kennedy and finding a verb in every sentence.
I shot a moose once. I was hunting upstate New York, and I shot a moose, and I strap him onto the fender of my car. And I'm driving home along the West Side Highway. But what I didn't realize was that the bullet did not penetrate the moose. It just creased his scalp, knocking him unconscious. and I'm driving through the Holland Tunnel, and the moose woke up. So I'm driving with a live moose on my fender, and the moose is signaling for a turn, you know? And there's a law in New York State against driving with a conscious moose on your fender Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And I'm very panicky. And then it hits me. Some friends of mine are having a costume party. I'll go. I'll take the moose. I'll ditch him at the party. It wouldn't be my responsibility. So I drive up to the party, and I knock on the door. The moose is next to me. My host comes to the door. I say, hello. You know the Solomons. We enter. The moose mingles. Did very well. Scored. Some guy was trying to sell him insurance for an hour and a half. 12 o'clock comes. They give out prizes for the best costume of the night. First prize goes to the Berkowitzes, a married couple dressed as a moose. The moose comes in second. The moose is furious. He and the Berkowitzes lock antlers in the living room. They knock each other unconscious. Now I figure here's my chance. I grab the moose, strap him to my fender, and shoot back to the woods. But I got the Berkowitzes. So I'm driving along with two Jewish people on my fender. There's a law in New York State. Tuesdays, Thursdays, and especially Saturdays. The following morning, the Berkowitzes wake up in the woods in a moose suit. Mr. Berkowitz is shot, stuffed, and mounted at the New York Athletic Club. And the joke is on them because it's restricted.
Sick humor persists, but the political satire of the 50s is largely a thing of the past in America, as Mort Sahl has recently lamented. Under the Johnson regime, satire, except of the MacBird order, has given place to demonstration and the protest song. You don't laugh at President Johnson. You either support him or denounce him. We shall be hearing them in a protest song about Vietnam next week, but to close this program, here are the Fugs, with an example of contemporary sick. Their theme is the old dope peddler, as invented some dozen years ago by Tom Lehrer. But somehow, rhythm and techniques appear to have changed in the interim. In case you have some difficulty in sorting it out, the title of the song is Dirty Old Man. The singers, the Village Fugs.
On the old schoolyard. I got thrill pills for all the little chickies, and I got funny cigarettes for all you boys. And I got dirty pictures for all of you together. Well, I guess I better go. I see the campus cop is coming. I better split now. Remember Leon Trotsky.
That was Sick Humor and Satire, a selection from the 50s, introduced by D.G. Brightson.